small. Lay a big hit and pass a kick the ball. This game is for us all. From Seattle down toward the Keys, this game is you, this game is me. Cast dogs and steer, be the tree. This game is America, so sing it loud with me. College football forever. College football forever. Downtown LA, Starkville sit. One week you're up next, take a dip. Run the rock, or let it rip. This game is America. All say, can you sing it with me?
We just stepped on the feet with a hot nail moving across their nose. Whoa, Nelly!
College football forever. College football forever. College football forever. College football forever.
College football is a year-round discussion with these two. Here's JC and Morgan. Mike Morgan of ESPN and J.C. Sherbert of 24/7 Sports have you covered, beginning right now.
Welcome, everybody. It is a special late-night installment of J.C. and Morgan. I think this might be the latest one we've ever done in the nearly 300-episode history, 10-year history of J.C. and Morgan, but we figured why not? You know, we've done special shows. We did one a few years ago that was very popular on the day of the selection, the playoff selection, like literally that afternoon. I think it was afternoon back then. Heck, I can't remember. But yeah, we've never done one right after the national championship game until tonight. This is a special one. We're going to go straight through. It's like a DJ saying commercial free rock block. It's a rock block. We are, of course, powered and presented by Advocare, and I'm still going off the energy, off the spark I took this morning from Advocare, the rehydrate I took after a little workout this afternoon. Other than that, JC, I'm on pure adrenaline. That was a lot of fun, the game itself. You've got the IU visor. You wore that before the game. I want to just point this out. You can't call him a complete bandwagon fan because he had this on this morning. Let me just say this. Like most games, I don't have a dog in the fight. You know, doing my job, what I do, it's to not have a rooting interest. But I'd be lying if I didn't tell you I was rooting for Indiana. I picked Miami. I picked Miami certainly to cover, and they did. But I thought Miami had a very good chance of winning this because I didn't think Indiana would be able to block the two ends. And quite frankly, they never did. But Indiana is so well coached, and they have so many quality players that they were able to overcome that and win the game. And JC, I don't want to sound too corny when I say this, but I think it's a win for college football because I just think of all the fan bases that are continually told, yeah, we can't win this thing. We're going to try to be a 10-win team. We're going to try to maybe compete for a conference championship, but we're never going to be invited to the big boy table because very few teams have been. And I'll end my little monologue with one stat that I just caught at the end, and I didn't know this until Chris Vowers said it. This is the first time a team has won the national championship that had never won one before since. You want to take a guess at that? Did you catch Fowler's stat on this? I didn't think about this.
The first time national champion since, it has to be the Gators in 96, right?
Correct.
Yeah, Florida.
Good job. That's by about, you.
It's about 29 years ago. Yeah, because it's college. It's hard to break through in this sport.
Incredibly hard. And, yeah. But I didn't think it was that long. I started thinking to myself, and even though Clemson was kind of irrelevant for a long time, they did win one in 81.
Won one in 81, yeah.
And then like BYU even won one in 84. But let me say, so from 96 on, like, was there any big surprises of a national championship? Like Clemson's first one, they were a pretty big underdog, right? And they wound up beating Alabama. But there hasn't been, like, you know, just a program that has no tradition, no nothing. You have to understand to really appreciate this. Indiana wasn't just like an underdog story the last couple of years. They were one of the worst programs in the history of the sport. And they hire a guy from JMU, and nobody thought twice about it. They start five players. They start five players from JMU. And they wind up winning the national championship and going 16-0. It's the first ever 16-0 team. I do think it's great for the sport of college football. And I'm not afraid to say that, even if it sounds a little hokey.
Yeah, as our producer points out, they're the first 16-0 team since 1894.
1894. Yeah, I wasn't counting that one.
I think they played multiple games in 1 week back then. You know,
I think Sewanee went on a train and played like six teams in 7 days back in those times.
There's a story about that. You know, they're the first 16-0 team with the modern era of the game. And it's unbelievable what they accomplished. And you're right about it being good for the sport. The sport has a very large middle class. I don't even know that Indiana would have been considered middle class.
No,
this is the toughest.
They're
job
in the
out
government
there.
Cheese line. Yeah, for a long, long bad. Time.
And they, if you look at the basketball schools that what we refer to as basketball schools, I certainly don't mean that in a disparaging way, but if you look at the schools in the Power Four that are really good at basketball but also play Power Four football, you know, you look at North Carolina, you look at UCLA, you look at Kansas, you look at Indiana, you look at Kentucky, at Duke, okay? Of those jobs, like when you're just looking at it at face value, where can I win? Like you often say, the path of least resistance.
Mm-hmm.
What I don't know. I think maybe for the one you would take sixth out of those six, you could probably debate Kansas and Indiana and Duke, because they're kind of it's recency bias. They just won the ACC championship,
right? And won one under Spurrier not that long ago.
One there, Elko won there. Now Manny Diaz. You know, you could argue, you can make an argument for Duke just because it's a smaller private school fan base. Obviously, Indiana does not have a small fan base at all. But historically, Indiana, I mean, is it tougher to win there? Kentucky? Well, Kentucky's got better history. You know, Kentucky is is kind of in a little bit better situation being in the SEC as far as access to talent. There's very little talent in the state of Indiana for football. You are second and third, and you're not that Purdue's been a bunch of world beaters, but historically they've been better than IU in football as far as history goes. Notre Dame is in that state. I mean, you got to compete with that for what scrap you are, you know, and it's hard. It's a basketball school. Bloomington's in kind of southwestish Indiana. Most of the talent is in Indy, from Indy North. And you're in the Big Ten, and you've always kind of been the bottom of the barrel in the Big Ten. I mean, it's a tough job. But he's gone in there, and he's what, 27-2 in a national championship and a Big Ten championship in 2 years. That's I don't want to say it's a miracle, but it's unprecedented in this sport that you're right, is so hard to win and break through. We've had teams, Mike, in my lifetime that have broken in, played for a championship. Virginia Tech in 1999, for example. And Florida State handled them pretty well. TCU in the playoff era. What happened to them against Georgia? Their dreams.
66-3.
Dreams were crushed, right? Other than that, it's kind of been the same old teams. So it was even kind of unprecedented for Indiana to get there, and kudos to Miami for getting back and playing for it for the first time since 02. But man, you know, to win it and to do it in the fashion they did is unbelievable. Because there were times, this tonight's game was very good, very close game. And I thought Miami would give them a game, and I thought they would cover. I thought the 8.5 was a little bit large. Almost didn't cover, but they did. So it was a fantastic football game. Hats off to Miami for getting there. I think that Mario Cristobal deserves a lot of credit for how his team played. They were kind of the last team in the playoffs, and then they get all the way there. But if you look at what Indiana did, I mean, boy, you know, who's really beaten, even in the DeBoer era, who's beaten Alabama like that with something on the line? Nobody. Oregon, Dan Lanning's 26-3 the last 2 years at Oregon. One loss was to Ohio State in the Rose Bowl last year. The other two are to Kurt Cignetti and the Hoosiers this season. Yeah, that's a good football program. Or and if you would have told me that I needed to place a sizable bet on something and I had to draw it out of a hat, and I drew out of the hat Oregon will win a national championship before Indiana in football, I'd have gone ahead and spent the money.
Of course.
I would have spent the money. But here we are. Here we are. So great story.
And this is a phenomenal story. And by the way, let's thank our phenomenal audience. I wasn't sure when we announced this time, as we're now approaching midnight Eastern time, how many people would be able to listen live. A lot of you, maybe most of you, listen later on Spotify and iTunes and YouTube and everything else. But Rodney, Jimmy, Jacob, I am Burgesson, Darian, Ashley, Harrison, F. Barn, Ross, Cynical Aries, and Philip and Quentin, many more. Brandon, appreciate you tuning in live. It goes to show you, because I know probably just about all of you, 99.9% of you, are not fans of Miami or Indiana, but you love the sport. And college football, I thought this playoff was a win. The ratings, not that that's everything, massive. I do have some friends that went to the game today. The tickets were, if you want to judge on that, way expensive. And of course, it's still sold out. So for all the talk about everything that's wrong with college football, I get it. And you and I made a pact, I think, right around the time the season started. We were not going to go down that trip to negative town and focus on NIL and the portal and everything that's wrong and money and this and that. We had all off season to talk about that. And we might talk about that this off season too. But once the season started and the games were being played, that's really what people care about in the fall and into now January 19th, which that's another story for another time. The fact, yeah, that we have a title game this late in the year. I think that's certainly, the calendar is still very much fixable, in my opinion. We need to get there at some point. But nevertheless, this is the story itself. Like, the game was great. It started off a little sluggish. People always want to see offense. I'm one of those people too. If I watch 9-3, I'm not going to say, well, it was a great defensive battle. I'm probably going to say, well, the offense could have been a lot better. Tonight, Mendoza could not get cozy in the pocket at all. And don't feel bad if you're Indiana, because Miami did that to everybody. It's why I was so high on Miami most of the season, is because watching Mesidor and Bain, I go back to Copeland and Curry, 92 Alabama. Very few teams in college football have not one but two elite defensive ends. When you have that in college football, you're so far ahead of the game. They had it. They have a cornerback who, If this were a basketball game, he would have fouled out. We don't call pass interference anymore in college football, apparently. This whole mutual combat crap is ridiculous. If you ever play the wide receiver position, you know that if a defensive back is allowed to grab your jersey and impede progress, you can't. It's almost impossible to catch the ball. So if you're not calling that, it's. I get it. Let them play. Let them play. Let them play means don't call holding on every play. Let them play means, like, toward the end there when Miami had a hit out of bounds, it could have been a late flag. It was so-so. I'm glad they didn't call it. That's let them play. Just letting guys clutch wide receivers and not allowing the passing game to be successful, that's not letting them play. That's just stupid. But that's, again, another story for another time. What I love about this, the way this season ended overall, is that, again, it gives a lot of people hope moving forward, because it wasn't just Indiana this year. If we widen the scope a little bit, JC, it was Vanderbilt again. It was Diego Pavia who finished second in the Heisman Trophy race, and they also had a great year. We had two Group 5 teams. I realize that's probably one too many for the playoff, but we do have good stories like Tulane and James Madison every year. We have other programs that are doing good things in college football that are not all blue bloods. If there's one thing that you can look at, and I'll say this, Texas Tech is a great story predominantly because of a man named Cody Campbell, who I give him all the credit in the world. Yeah, he got a lot of money. He doesn't have to spend it on college football and basketball and softball, but he does for his beloved Red Raiders. I know Mark Cuban was on the sideline. Mark Cuban, if you watch Shark Tank, is very, very rich, but he's also very thrifty at the same time. I'm not so sure he gives that much money to Indiana football. Their story's different than Texas Tech. Texas Tech went and spent $7 million on their defensive line, and it looked like an SEC defensive line. Indiana started 5 James Madison transfers, started some other kids that had no stars or 1 star or 2 stars. Like the other kid, wide receiver Becker out of Nashville, he went to a small private school. When he was at Indiana, when Cignetti got the job, he told him, look, you're probably not even going to make this team, but we'll give you a shot. He ran off every other wide receiver that was on the Indiana roster. I did a little deep digging. That kid was like a stud wide receiver and track star. He was winning track championships in the 110-meter hurdles. He's an athlete. But for whatever reason, JC, in the world of evaluation, some of these guys just fall through the cracks. And Indiana is full of a bunch of those. So I've heard the analogy of Indiana. They probably have a sugar daddy and Big Ten money like Texas. They're really not the same. It's not the same story, folks. They didn't win this, and they didn't put together that roster based on a massive payroll at all.
No. They do have some resources. I mean, they sure. invest just like every other school in a power conference. But because even the guys that they got, you know, the guys from James Madison, the guys that, you know, they did get through the portal, the guys that were there that were good that did not leave when a new coach came in. You know, they even probably had to spend money on that, because they were 3-9 football team. And I thought Tom Allen did a pretty good job as the head coach there. I mean, I thought, you know, that was not bad. You know, they had the 1 year with Michael Penix during the pandemic where they were good. But they don't. Yeah, it's nothing. It's not anywhere close to Texas Tech. It's an old fashioned. He's out evaluated everybody, because look, people can talk about the talent level all they want. The talent level on the field tonight, I think Miami was better in some spots, but Indiana was better in others. There's 16 future NFL draft picks on this Indiana team. They have talent. What they didn't have was like known talent, raw, like the projected talent coming in. The recruiting rep with a lot of guys. Some people had Mendoza 4 stars coming out of high school. He's a borderline guy. Most had him 3. And then the center, is it Coogan?
Notre Dame.
From Notre Dame. He was that's Pat Coogan sounds like a Notre Dame offensive lineman's
Doesn't
name.
He?
Right. Yeah, he sounds like a center. That's a great
You could even put
name.
A Meister on the end
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, Cougar Meister. Coogan Meister. But you know, but other than that, you know, 6 guys or so. Some of the better players did come from James Madison and are from the state of Virginia, which is a good talent producing state. There are some from right there in Indiana, though. Pretty good football players too. So
I'll give you a guy.
Yeah.
I'll give you a guy. I don't know his hometown, but I know he was one of the JMU 5. And he doesn't get talked about enough, and he won't be remembered in this game because he didn't find the end zone. They don't win that game without Kalen Black, the running back. That dude, 17 carries, 79 yards, 4.6 on the ground. But, man, what he does, gut punch, gut punch, gut punch, keeps the defense honest. Gets the most out of every single run. I mean, he never, ever gets hit backwards, misses a crease. If there's 3 yards to be had, he'll give you five. If there's six, he'll give you eight. Two players. Kalen Black, love that kid. And I'm going to give you another one. D'Angelo Pons, all 5'9", 170 pounds of him. He's going up against 6'3", 6'4", Miami wideouts, and he's making plays left and right. I've always said the notion that, well, I mean, if you got 6'3 wideout, you just throw a bunch of jump balls. Nobody can't. That's bogus. A great defensive back can break up plays like that on positioning. He was just a blanket out there, absolute blanket. And I guarantee you, he didn't have a lot of stars because he's just undersized. But those were two guys that, again, won't be remembered. It's all going to be Mendoza, the fourth down call by Cignetti, balls, and the run by Mendoza, just opening up his rib cage to a shot and putting the ball in the end zone. I mean, I thought it was crazy to go for it on fourth down. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought it was, I'm like, what are you doing? I was like, I was like Adrian in Rocky III when Rock goes back in the ring against Hulk Hogan. What are you doing? That's what I was yelling at the TV. And then he calls a quarterback draw for a less than fleet of foot Mendoza, and he puts the ball in harm's way and they get the touchdown. But anyway, that will be remembered. That's the Heisman moment. That's the championship moment. The block punt would be another. But those two kids I just mentioned, big part of why Indiana is 16-0.
Absolutely. D'Angelo Pons is what a night for him. He played high school football at Chaminade Badana in Broward County.
Another Miami kid.
Originally from Miami. And sometimes you have 5'9" corners and 5'9" receivers that are really good, Mike. They tend to play with a chip on their shoulder, and he is very good, a very good player. And then the running back you mentioned, Black, I think is his name. Mm-hmm. He is from Virginia Beach, so 7'5", 7". So two big
stars next to his name.
They were two or three. James Madison, I think, was FCS level when they.
That's
they
right. Found him. He was there. He was an FCS recruit.
You know, and you look at those two. I mean, Black is 5'10", 210. That's not overwhelming size. Right. Probably was not a big 40-yard dash guy, but these guys. A lot of them are very talented players. I thought their line of scrimmage, Indiana's, now they probably don't have as many NFL guys on either line of scrimmage as the U does, or as most teams do. But they play tough and hard and together, and they play the game the right way, and they play with toughness. And I think that's a big difference, too. I mean, I watched Indiana play Notre Dame in the playoff last year. I think the lines of scrimmage for the Hoosiers this year were significant. Now, whether that's returning players developing, whether that's new guys in there, whether that's they had some injuries up there last year in the playoff and those were backups. The guys up front on both sides of the ball to me for Indiana were much, much improved. I noticed that against Oregon, against Illinois, Oregon and the first time they played them against Penn State when they got the heart of their schedule, when they had to go to Iowa City and win a game, I said, well, this is a different team, because last season when they went to Ohio State, Ohio State whipped their butt and got the best of them. Notre Dame whipped their butt and got the best of them. They didn't really play anybody else. This year, they answered all comers with, you know, a lot of returning skill talent, but also improvement on the lines of scrimmage and just sheer will and execution. On offense, it was execution. On defense, it was what they call assignment football. So two coaching cliches. Or the root cause of Indiana football winning the national championship here for the 2025 season.
We have to at least mention Miami in this whole thing. I'm very curious how Miami is like Miami's going to keep spending a lot of money, and they're already being rumored to get the Mensa kid from Duke as the possible next portal guy at quarterback. I talked about this on the morning show today. You know, for a lot of programs, that's just they're going to be their answer. That's going to be their MO. They're not going to recruit quarterbacks, develop them, redshirt them, let them earn their starting role, and then play them for three. That's for a number of elite programs. That's just not going to be the ticket. It's going to be what Miami's doing. You know, last year, of course, it was Cam Ward. This year, it's Carson Beck. Next year, it's going to be somebody else. There's plenty of other programs that have been doing that. But I don't know if they're going to have this level of team again. They struck gold with this roster. You and I talked about it way back when in September when they throttled Florida State and Tallahassee when Florida State still had a pulse. And you just watched them and you're like, my Lord, there's NFL talent all over the place on that team. And Cristobal has kind of ironed out some of his clock management flaws and everything else. And all of a sudden, maybe the U was back. But I wonder if they bounce back from this as quickly as a lot of Miami fans are hoping they will. This is a stinger. You know, they'll keep spending money and they'll keep getting athletes from South Florida. But I don't know if they'll be this close again for a while. This was the one that really it felt like it might be their year, even though Indiana was the great story. It felt like this might be Miami's year. And of course, by 6 points, it was not.
Yeah, I felt like they, you know, I feel like what they'll do is continue to invest down there. They've obviously figured out how to get their players large NIL deals, and they, I guess they have people that kind of facilitate that. If you look at what's happening with Menza, the quarterback from Duke, that they kind of struck out on some quarterbacks, and you know, then they just said, "Well, let's just go get him." And Duke people are surprised. But I'm like, did you not just jack him from Tulane? I mean, and offer him all this money? And yeah, I mean, so why are you surprised he's leaving for more money? That's nothing against Menza. He's a heck of a quarterback. But they'll continue to compete. You know, in the ACC, you've got, you know, Clemson's coming off 7-6. Florida State can't seem to get it right. Virginia Tech has new life with James Franklin. We're all coming off a season where Virginia and Duke played for the title because of the tiebreakers. There's an opportunity, I think, for Miami to kind of use this to build within their conference, which is something they've never done. They still didn't win the ACC this year. They still didn't play for it this year. They've only played for it once.
One time.
And kind of become that new team in the ACC. And if you do that, you know, in theory, you're going to continue to make the playoff and get a crack at it. I do believe, though, Mike, this was one of the best rosters in college football when you talk about how many good players they had. You look last year, I thought Ohio State was the best roster in college football. I think Miami was just one of them. I think Texas had a lot of dudes. We'll probably go see that. Mm-hmm. And then a handful of others. Best roster does not always win. Historically, it usually does. But, you know, and then if they had won tonight, I thought that then it'd be interesting to kind of look at the fact that we've had in the two 12-team playoff years, two national champs. One was an 8 seed, one was a 10 seed, but they were probably at some point during the year, we all looked up and said, that's the best team. Ohio State last year, maybe this year, they just kind of screwed around and lost two games during the regular season. So would that become more common would have been my question, two lost national champ. But it wasn't meant to be. It's right back to the same old beautiful record that for the champion, and Indiana does have a big one. But moving forward, I think the next step for Miami, it almost sounds like a step back, though, is to kind of get out there and be the best team in the ACC moving forward. And I think with Mario Cristobal there, this – Getting to the championship game and playing for the championship, probably very cathartic for this program because it's been a while. And if they're going to be back, you know, you can't just have one good year and then go back to being, you know, that you. You got to be this you from now on.
I will say this. Say what you want about the ACC in Miami and Florida State. We know how desperate they were to get out of it. What they did settle on was they're like Notre Dame in that Miami gets 100%. I think the number, they've already made $20 million on this playoff run. It would have been 32 had they won the national championship. SEC school does that. Big Ten school does that. That's spread throughout the conference. Miami and Florida State said, no. We don't want to do that anymore. We're not paying for Wake Forest's wake room. If we go and make a playoff run, we get all the cash. So Miami just did make $20 million. And they got a couple sugar daddies. So maybe the ACC is not so bad for Miami. And it's the path of least resistance if you want to go ahead and go to the playoff, right?
Yeah, as a Clemson and Florida State were like, you know, just assuming, which is always dangerous, and they didn't get paid as much as Miami will end up getting paid, and it's kind of funny because there was a big debate as to whether or not Miami or Notre Dame deserved to get in.
Oh yeah,
and Miami's the last team in. Miami's the last team in, and almost won the damn thing. And it was legit too, man. You know, you Kyle Field, first playoff game in the history of A&M football. Even though it was an early game, Kyle Field's loud. It's tough to go win there, and they did. And they did it with defense. Then Ohio State, Ohio State had a weird year because they beat Texas in the first game, and then they played absolutely nobody ever. Until they played Indiana, and it's like Ohio State showed up at the Big Ten championship game, and everyone's like, "Oh, hey, how's it going? Feels like we hadn't seen you in a while." But they were still considered, you know, a favorite to get to win it all again. Ohio State's got a very good roster, very talented, and Miami jumped on them and won it out there. They got hot and won it, then held off the other. I don't want to say Cinderella, but the other middle-class team that was trying to make it, an Ole Miss, which was a fantastic story, and kind of, you know, spoiled the people that pull for underdogs like myself, the dream matchup of Ole Miss-Indiana for the title. But, you know, they had a really good year. They showed some things this year, Mike, and they do get to cash a check, a big one. But they showed some things this year that have been kind of going the other way for Miami through the years. Like, oh, here they, you know, I remember when they opened against Alabama a few years back, and everybody's like, oh, the U, they're back. They beat Alabama in the opener. Alabama just thumped them. And they've kind of done that for a while. But I will say that, you know, showing the resiliency and getting there and earning it like that, even though they did lose the championship game. I think that'll make cashing that check even sweeter for the U when they get it from the ACC.
Yeah. We'll read some of these comments later on. I'm amazed at how many people are as awake as we are as we've officially hit midnight on the East Coast. JC, where you are, 11 p.m. Brandon says, is Bain a top five pick? In my mind, abso-freaking-lutely. If you look at the most valuable players in the draft, very often, everybody agrees quarterback's number one, and Mendoza might very well go number one. Some people have doubts on that. I've talked to some scouts that are like, no, I don't think he's even first-round talent, even though he will go first round. That's fine. Everybody's got an opinion. But defensive end, guys that can put heat on the quarterback, those are highly coveted. Bain is that dude. He is that guy, and I don't think he did anything to hurt his stock tonight. One other conference comment. It's going to be discussed, JC. Look, I think we do a good job on this show. This is a national podcast. You and I are both quote-unquote SEC guys, but I think we're very fair. We don't root for the demise of other conferences. We didn't want to see the Pac, for example, get blown up to smithereens. But when you hire consecutive inept commissioners, that's what happens. I don't sit there and say, you know, this conference sucks or that. I mean, I'll point out some are stronger than others, but like I don't root for the demise of anything. I think college football is healthy as a sport when you have some balance. But I guarantee you, the anti-SEC fan base, name it out there, and they had to hear how good the SEC was for a long time. They're going to point out it's the third straight year that the SEC was not in the title game, and we now have had three consecutive Big Ten champions, Michigan, Ohio State, and Indiana. And Nick Saban, who is unbelievably good on every studio show he's on. He really, really is. He said something I loved, and he said it halfway jokingly today on the pregame show, JC. He said, well, here's the thing about NIL. You know, when I was coaching, the only way Southern kids ever wanted to go up north is if you paid them, which, as we know, back then that would have been illegal, but this just in, it happens. Now it's 100% illegal, 100% legal. And this just in, Big Ten schools are flush with cash. They all are. You know, I don't know if Indiana does have a true sugar daddy, but I know they got a lot of money. Why? Because they're in the Big Ten and their TV money is massive and their endowments are massive. So the Big Ten is pretty much putting everybody else on notice that, hey, yeah, it's colder up here. Yeah, some of us are near the Rust Belt, and we don't have maybe we don't have the tailgating down like the SEC does, but we can play some ball. And if you give us the ability to get great players, we're going to coach them up, and we're going to play with anybody. And right now, they've got bragging rights.
Yeah, agreed with that. It's you know, the thing that gets lost sometimes, if you look at the stadium tonight, that's Miami's home field.
Yeah.
Now, Hard Rock Stadium, I've seen it when Notre Dame's come to town or another team, and the other school has a lot of fans in the stands, don't get me wrong, but not like tonight where they
took over.
Boxed out, man. That's Indiana has, I think, more living alumni than any other Power Four school in the country. The Big Ten schools are enormously gigantic schools. They always have been big land grant schools, the vast majority, with thousands of alums. I mean, that's why when you like go to a bowl, we used to go to bowl games back in the day where the SEC teams would go down to Florida, Tampa, Orlando, wherever, and play Big Ten teams. The Big Ten got folks would show up, and heck, they'd have half the stadium. And you're like, man, that's a long drive or a flight or whatever for Iowa to come to Tampa. Number one, any excuse at all to go to Florida in January if you're from up in the Midwest. But number two, there's just a lot of them. There's a ton of them. I mean, I work in digital sports media. I did it at the national level at Rivals.com and at 24/7 Sports, you know, and looked at the different markets and the Big Ten markets. It's math. I mean, they're huge markets because there's a ton of people and a ton of passion, and they absolutely love football. They do it differently in the South. They don't really complain about, except unless you're Ohio State, that had too many noon kickoffs, but like at Wisconsin and Iowa, and I mean, that, in the Midwest, they like the 11. It's 11 a.m. local time.
11 a.m.
They like that, you know, because kegs and eggs, that's what they're used to. So it is a little different. And there aren't as many players in the primary Big Ten footprint as there are down south. But, you know, like a lot of kids from Virginia, which is a great football state on Indiana's roster. So kids from Florida and all over. And most of your Big Ten rosters, you know, they have a heavy dose of Ohio, and then they kind of go around the country and bring kids in, and they have the resources to go realistically do that and build competitive rosters now. And a lot of it is tied into the size of their, call it community, boosters, alums, fans, whatever. So that's that doesn't surprise me at all that in this era, the more people you have supporting, obviously, the more dollars you have and the more resources and all that. And I think you look in the stands tonight, it was history for sure. And Indiana fans definitely have traveled to support basketball through the years. They're good fans. But that just kind of shows you what you're dealing with in terms of the vast numbers of supporters that some of these Big Ten schools have.
Well, and since you mentioned basketball, I've said this a million times, and even more so since I kind of married into a Kentucky family. But everybody, you say Indiana and you say basketball school the way you say Kentucky and you say basketball school. And I guarantee you, Kentucky fans, knowing them the way I do, they're looking at this more than anybody and saying, how come we're not doing that? Very similar. And very similar in that, just like I always talk about with Kentucky, Kentucky fans love football. They tailgate for football. They've spent a lot of money on football. Mark Stoops was one of the top five paid coaches before he got fired eventually. They invest a ton in football. You can be good at both. Fan bases have enough attention span where they can be like, I want to win at football, September, October, November, or maybe now even through mid-January. And then I also want to be in the Final Four in basketball. It's not impossible. You can do it. And fans love both sports. So Indiana fans, oh, it's a basketball school. They love football in Indiana. The Colts have always done well in terms of attendance. Indiana just has sucked. So they haven't had much to cheer about. Unlike their, you know, their border rivals in Wisconsin has had some great moments, and Ohio State and Michigan. but they love football in Indiana. They just haven't been good at it.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, that's what it's been good, and a lot of it has to do with, you know, there's not a lot of football talent in the high school ranks in that state. It doesn't mean there's none. And I still don't think that, although, you know, it's more, you know, the closest big city, Chicago, for Notre Dame. It's considered sort of Chicago's college team rather than Indiana. Notre Dame's in Indiana, and it means something to the handful of players that are there, especially when you go north of Indianapolis. And so it's tough if you're the Hoosiers. Basketball's kind of always been your thing. And, you know, there's a movie about who, how about that? The movie Hoosiers, you know, about the Hickory High basketball team that won it. And we've always, you know, the DNA or the outside perception of Indiana has always been that it's a basketball state. It's because they are good at basketball and there's underdog stories. But how about that underdog story there as it applies to this thing?
You got me thinking. Sadly, we lost Gene Hackman this year. They could have done the Indiana documentary and had Gene Hackman been the narrator of the Hoosiers championship in football. That would have been too much synergy. My head would have exploded just thinking about that. Yeah, it would have been awesome.
Crazy.
We won't take too much longer. I do want to mention, we'll get to some chat row here in a second. I do want to get your thoughts on just the season as a whole, JC, as we kind of put a bow on it. We're not going to stop JC and Morgan in the offseason. We never do. But I do want to just have some immediate thoughts on that. Do want to mention also that we're presented by Advocare. Again, promo code Mike Morgan, that's me, 20% off your entire order, not just like one item. I was talking to a good friend of mine. He's like a health nut. He's always preaching to me about, hey, you got to try this. You got to try that. And I said, well, have you tried this? And I showed him Spark. And he goes, well, I've heard of it. And he goes, is there any sugar in it? I said, no. I know you wouldn't support that. He goes, okay, that's good, Mike. He said, but what about the vitamins? I said, look at it. I don't even know what half these are. I just know it's good. And he looked at it. He goes, wow, this is actually really good stuff. I did not know this. I converted a health nut into Spark. That's one of the many great products that Advocare has. Advocare.com. I've been using it for nearly 15 years now. Spark in the morning, not coffee. Rehydrate after workouts. So you have stuff that can help you sleep. You can have stuff for anti-aging, all kinds of stuff. It's all there on one website, all delivered at your door. And again, you don't have Mickey the Meathead having to talk to at the GNC store and leading you the wrong way. That's always a plus as well. Rodney starts off chat row this morning. I can say this morning now because we're past midnight. Bandwagon fan. Yeah, he saw my Hoosiers. Yes, for tonight, Jimmy, Rodney, you're right. I'm a bandwagon fan. Jimmy says, glad Indiana won. Jacob says, Miami plus 8.5 still hit, though. You're right, Jacob. That would have been my play if I did that kind of thing. There's a lot of fans saying what I am Burgesson saying, why not us? And that can apply to a number of schools. I know we have a big Gamecock contingent, and that's certainly applies to a program like South Carolina. Yeah, why not us? Why not us? Why not? There's a whole lot of that, as you can imagine.
Yes.
Ashley says a lot of issues with college football, but it's hard to argue the sport's current opportunity of leveling the playing field each season with NIL and the portal. Totally agree, Ashley. I think so many things that have happened. College football is not smart enough to do this intentionally. Like, greed drives college football on everything. But sometimes, just like capitalism, to quote the great Gordon Gekko, greed can be good. Some good things have come out of greed, I guess, in the case of football, wouldn't you say?
Yes, absolutely. And that's an unintended consequence, as is evidenced by articles that came out this week where the Texas AD, the Ohio State AD, the Notre Dame AD, the Miami AD, they all were talking about how, I just don't think the cap's going to be enough, the spending cap. The blue blood schools are kind of looking at it going, well, gosh, we just, you know, because their answer to everything is just outspend everybody to restore order.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's the answer either. But, yeah, it's thrown a wrench into it. And this Indiana winning a national championship in football is a big eye-opener, not only for the blue bloods that got their teeth kicked in by this team this year, but also for the vast middle class in college football. You know, you mentioned Kurt Cignetti got a lot of people fired. Yeah. That will continue. And as these stories continue and teams gradually break through and win, because I don't think this is the last time this is going to happen. It may not be for Indiana, but another school will come up and do well in this era and win it all and have a breakthrough, hopefully. And as they do that more and more, other schools are going to be like, well, wait a minute, why isn't our guy getting us there? And so that's going to be an unintended consequence as well. But I think absolutely, it's something that can it's so hard. Like you mentioned, we hadn't had a first-time champion since the Gators in 96. And the fact they won one under Steve Spurrier surprised nobody. It wasn't it wasn't like this. You know, there's been underdogs and underdog upsets and things like that, Mike, but very few times where the underdog's gone home with the trophy.
With hiring a coach who I believe is now 27-2 at Indiana, who is, when they hired him, was just short of being eligible for Social Security. That none of this makes sense. A former quarterback at West Virginia that bet on himself and left a job at Alabama to see the head coach of IUP and then Elon and then JMU. Like, it didn't just like, oh, JMU when he was 35. No, he grinded and grinded and grinded. He is the ultimate. It's a Hollywood script story, to say the least, when you're talking about Cignetti. Harrison says, Mendoza, one of the gutsiest plays I can remember on that quarterback draw, given the circumstances, unreal will to win. You're almost running out of superlatives for that kid. 100% agree. And again, it was not going to be his night to throw for a bunch of yards. He had no time to throw, but he didn't get frustrated. He didn't force it. He didn't pull a Gino Toretta and just kind of vomit all over his shoes. He played a complete game and found the big plays that he needed to when he needed to. F. Barn, this game shows coaching matters. It's not just getting a bunch of great Jimmys and Joes. Cignetti walked on college football water, took a bunch of no-names from nothing to the top in two seasons. Well, there's a lot to be said about that. Coaching always matters. There's no doubt about that. I've always said, if you give me the choice, I'll take the team with the elite players versus a coach that's got not a lot of talent. In this case, I think, and Urban Meyer used a line, and I'm gonna flub this a little bit, JC. He said it's the most maximized talent team he's ever seen in college football. Did you catch that? Because I know you're a big Urban guy with the podcast and everything.
Oh, yeah. College football is not a talent game. It is a talent maximization. Football is a talent maximization game. Mm-hmm. There are guys all over the NFL that probably just raw God-given ability-wise, there's probably 10 guys that were better, that were teammates with them, that had more talent. But so much of the sport is what's it between the ears and what's in the chest, and the work you have to put in, the discipline you have to for yourself to get there, and that's just individually. Then you got to have the discipline to go take the coaching and play as a team and understand the game and the assignments and all that. It's hard, man. And so, yes, that football is without question. My friend Jerry Hamilton, who we used to work together 24/7 sports, we always talked about how it's a talent maximization game. And the teams that are going to be good and the players that are going to go on and to do great things and play in the NFL, they are all, even Saban, that's what he did. He had a lot of raw ability, raw talent, but look how good he got his guys. You know, then there were other 5 stars and stuff who went elsewhere that didn't quite make it, right? Mm-hmm. He maximized that talent. So, and I think because the baseline, there's no more Alabama. There's no more Georgia under Kirby those 2 years where teams are just far and away better. But because the baselines are closer than they've ever been, then it's even more so that the teams that are going to win it all are the teams that maximize what talent they have, because if everybody's kind of close, then what's the differentiator? It's going to be that maximization.
You can't,
and Urban's right.
you can't stockpile players like some of Saban's teams, Georgia's 0-1-0-2 teams. Those were, 21-22 teams. They were stacked. I don't think we have the super team anymore. I don't think we're going to have 2019 LSU for that matter anymore. I think it is going to be a little bit more. I don't like the word parity. It's got a negative connotation, but the playing field has definitely been leveled a little bit. I think it's safe to say that. Where'd it go? Phillip says, Revenge of the Nerds just won the national championship. Congrats, Indiana. Yeah.
The Tri-Lambs,
the Moos, Lewis and Gilbert, Booger. Who was the guy with the limp wrist javelin throw? Lamar. They all won tonight.
Yeah. That's her. Yeah.
That's a dimer. Come on now. Who's with me? Revenge of the Nerds. Not two or three. The original.
Unbelievable.
Quentin.
I still remember a couple years.
Yeah.
I still remember a couple of years ago when CBS took over the Big Ten television package. And some SEC people, like, you know, how they have CBS does a great job with the production of their games. I would still agree. Mm-hmm. So they took the production from the da 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 da, and it was the Memorial Stadium in Bloomington. It's about half full. I was like, oh man. And
you were looking live.
Everybody got a chuckle out of it, you know. Yeah. And here we are, you know.
So here we are, three in a row. Three in a row for the Big Ten. Give it up to the fighting Tapiti. It's after midnight. Petites, right? Petites, I got that right. Yeah. I'm trying to get everybody a shot here. Kind of like Florida State in 96, Florida had to go shotgun in the national championship because of FSU's DNs. Great, astute observation there, Brent. That's exactly what they did. Spurrier was never a shotgun guy, but in order for Werfel to have time to throw, it's exactly what he did. Ross DeBoss, South Carolina, 2026 national champs. Hey, there's a lot of schools saying that right now. Why not us? Why the heck not us? Here we go. SC Scout Guy. I'm glad that Lee Corso was able to hang on long enough to see this. Yeah, it's a great point. Lee Corso's smiling right now. He always held admiration for his time coaching the Hoosiers. That's cool. I didn't even think about that at the time. Good stuff there. I could go. You guys are great. I mean, we are after midnight, JC, and the chat row is just on fire right now. Good stuff. All right. Let's put a bow on it because I know everybody does have to get some sleep here tonight, including you, JC. Yes. Just put a bow on the season as a whole. Take this national championship game out. You know, we're still in the middle of the portal going on right now. As of right now, it's still a 12-team playoff. The SEC and the Big Ten can't agree on that. Money is still, you know, college football is flush in cash. Some schools are spending reportedly $40 million on rosters. So what do you think? Well, what do you think of 2025? What do you look forward to in 2026?
I thought it was a year where, you know, on the field, you know, there were a lot of breakthrough teams and a lot of things that were different and a lot of things that were the same. And it was once again another off season of it being an impossible sport to predict. We're still going to talk about it and analyze it and say what we think may happen. But I sat here and wrote down the preseason AP top 25 while you were going through chat row. Texas and Penn State and Ohio State and Clemson were the top four. Mm-hmm. Ohio State's the only one that made the playoff. Georgia was fifth, Notre Dame six, Oregon seven, Bama eight, LSU nine, Miami was 10th. Arizona State was 11th, Illinois 12th. Mm-hmm. So where was Indiana? 20th.
And that was A&M, coming off a good year.
A&M was 19th. Texas Tech was 23rd. You had Florida at 15, South Carolina at 13. Those teams had losing records. Michigan 14th. I guess that was about accurate. Oklahoma made the playoff. They were 18th. You know, so it just was one of those things where it's getting hard with the roster transition. And then now, you know, I think that a lot of the media, you know, they were kind of still hanging on to this notion of the blue chip ratio, which is totally dead now, right? It was a kind of a captain obvious thing anyway. But, you know, a team with seven blue chip recruits basically just won it all and were pretty doggone dominant against certain teams that do spend money and recruit at a high level star-wise. I think people were hanging on to that. So I think what this is going to do is maybe reassess how we evaluate, continue to help us adjust and come into this era of college football. You know, because it's like we talked to Phil Steele over the offseason. Well, when you watch and see what Ohio State did and how they won it, they had an older team that had a lot of returning players. They got Judkins and a couple of other guys out of the portal and added pieces to win it all. But they were still like a lot of veterans. So that's why everybody got behind Clemson and Penn State and teams like that. Like, okay, they're the homegrown. That's the way to go. Not this portal stuff, because Ole Miss went 9-3 and missed the playoff. Wow. Well, okay, that's 1 year. So now we go into this year, and that kind of got turned on its head a little bit, right? And so, and I think it's going to take years for all of us to figure that out. But this is once again a narrative busting year. The team that got the trophy at the end certainly bust all narratives and all that we've known about the sport and turns it on its head. And so daggum good football along the way too, and some intriguing moments and big games yet again across the whole landscape. And, you know, and I say that knowing that in our future episodes, there are a lot of things we need to dig into. There's a lot of things that made me mad recently about kind of where we're heading with some of the deciders in the sport. There's no leaders in college football. There's just deciders. Mm-hmm. And I think all that, yeah, all that needs to be worked out. But that's not for tonight. Tonight, it's just, I'm just happy.
All smiles.
Blessed that got to experience another college football season. It sucks because the clock is on again.
7 months till week zero, JC.
7 months till weeks until the game in Ireland, whoever that is this year. I think it's Georgia Tech and somebody maybe. But just blessed to be a part of this season. Blessed to live on this earth. To see Indiana win a national championship in football, you know, it was just a great experience yet again, getting to see everything and watch all the teams compete, and we'll see what happens next year.
We shall see, but this is not good night. Well, it's good night for us now, but it's not goodbye for us, because we'll be back next week, and we do shows throughout the off season. We do a lot more interviews, as you folks know. So the great thing about college football, it truly is a 12-month out of the year sport, and that's good.
Yeah, missing Tim Brando and Tim Brando and Tom
Luganbill, yeah.
It's about time to get those guys on.
I know. We got some great guests that we can't really squeeze in during the fall, but we'll definitely get in during the off season. Want to thank everybody tuning in live, and a lot of you I know will listen later on. And if so, hopefully you did get a good night's sleep. For the Mad Dog, Phil Molinax, doing great duty here late at night as well. For JC, it's Mike saying so long. Thank you for tuning in to a special installment of JC and Morgan.